Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Yvette Etu.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us in the pledge.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
And if I may get a motion to approve our minutes from our last meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And our financial report.
Good morning, Commissioners. Pleased to present to you the results of the 7 months ending July this year. July, if you might recall, had some atmospheric challenges in terms of weather. We had more than about a week's worth of days that were in the upper 80s and 90s. We had 5 days of Canadian wildfire smoke, and those presented some challenges to us for some of the outdoor activities that we rely upon. So we'll touch upon those as we go through the slides. On the expense side, I also want to mention that in July, we had 3 pays. So we maintain our books and financial reports during the year on a cash basis. So the timing of when those three pay months hit can cause variations year over year, but it's merely a timing difference between months. So looking at Cleveland Metro Parks as a whole, the first line I have highlighted is property taxes. We've been monitoring this all year long. We're about $4 million short of where we were last year this time. This is mostly at this point a result of just the timing of collections by the county and delays in the billings that have gone out. With new property tax reform that's gone out at the state level, there are additional layers and levels of review that have to go on by the state before the county can bill. So some of this is thrust upon them by changes that are going on. So bills to property taxpayers went out later this year, so the collections are coming in later. I can tell you on August 14th, we did receive another advance from the county for another $2.2 million. So we're now at this point about short maybe a couple million dollars. And then we have a final settlement that's coming on September 9th. And that should bring everything into line for our full year property taxes. But we're in contact with the county and we're monitoring how this is going. But at this point, it looks like just a timing issue. As far as charges for services go, I just wanted to highlight, you know, we had an $808,000 increase for the month of July compared to the prior year. $565,000 of that is attributable to the enterprise division, and the rest is spread amongst zoo and golf. And the year to date comparative on charges for services is $3.2 million, or about a 13% increase year over year, year to date. And we'll see more about the charges for services detail on the next few slides. The salaries and benefits line, this is where we see the impact of having a third pay in the month of July. The month last year was August, where there were three pays. So this will reverse itself when we see next month's results. And the impact of that third pay was about $2.9 million. So about 2.9 of that $4.8 million difference is because of the third pay. And then our operating surplus, again, year to date, this shows that our surplus has gone down year over year. But if you adjust that for the $2.9 million worth of that extra pay, we're actually ahead of last year. Looking at the zoo, through July, zoo attendance has been roughly 573,000 guests. That's up 5.7% from 2025. And revenue is up about 569,000, and that's about a 6.8% year-to-date comparative increase. The salaries and benefits line, again, this would be a continuing theme through today's presentation. The impact of that third pay for the zoo was about 671,000. I'm sorry, 486,000. So of that 671 unfavorable year-to-date difference, 486 of that is just the timing difference because of the third pay. And then that flows through to the operating surplus or subsidy. If you adjust it for that third pay in impact, the zoo's operating surplus has actually increased almost $300,000 year over year. Looking at golf. Golf's one of the divisions that was notably impacted by the oppressive heat and the hazardous wildfire smoke. And also, the 4th of July fell on a Saturday. So Saturdays and Sundays are incredibly important to golf. So if you throw a holiday in there, that's also a little bit of a impact on their sales. But despite that, golf still managed to improve year over year for the month of July by about $46,000, even though their monthly rounds were down by about 600. And golf is still up about 20,000 rounds year to date compared to last year. And revenue is up year to date in every category. Again, on the salaries and benefits line, of the $772,000 unfavorable variance year over year, $355,000 of that is the impact of the third pay. So if you look at their operating surplus, it actually has gone up about $260,000 year over year if you remove the impact of the third pay. You can see the impact of the third pay when you look at this at a golf course level, but I did highlight four of the golf courses who, even despite having an extra pay in the month, still their revenue, operating revenue, and their operating result year to date is still favorable to last year. And then looking at enterprise, compared to 2025, the concession revenues are up over $1 million. It's up 44% for the month of July and 42% year to date. And in the next slide, we'll add a little bit more detail to that. Again, the salaries and benefits line of the $770,000 unfavorable variance, $436,000 of that is due to the third pay. So while their operating surplus looks about break even month, year over year, year to date, it's actually increased about $428,000. And then here's the enterprise was impacted more by the third pay in terms of how this looks on a location by location basis. The sailing center and our parking lots are the two where both their revenue and their operating result has improved year over year, despite the third pay, which makes sense for the parking lots, obviously. And at Commissioner Rinker's request, the last board meeting, we've added this slide that breaks down our total funding into its major categories. Those categories being our property tax support, our property tax revenue, grants, gifts, and donations, charges for services for golf and enterprise and other events and things that we do, and zoo admissions, and then everything else. And this is for the period really post-pandemic, which we think is the most relevant period to look at this. And I think the takeaways here are, if you look at property taxes as a percentage of our total funding, what funds everything that we do, between 2022 and 2026 year to date, the percentage that property taxes make up has dropped from 57% to 47%. And that offset comes from additional grants, gifts, and donations that support both the operations and the capital things that we do, and also our charges for services. And I think the other thing that this demonstrates is while we need every dollar of our property taxes and we deploy all those dollars, we need even more to provide the services and create the capital projects and manage the capital projects that we do. So we need money on top of the property taxes that we receive, but we're able to creatively find ways to fund those other things that we do and continue to provide the services and amenities and capital projects that at the high level of quality that our taxpayers demand.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
That is helpful.
Yep. And I thought I would, again, just adding just a little bit more context to this. If you look at the, you know, the grants, gifts, and donations is a very significant, as well as the charges for services. This is really a team effort across the Metro Parks. You have the development team that is working so hard to, for the grants, the gifts, the donations element of that. We have our marketing team who's finding partnerships and sponsorships to support the programming and things that we do, the special events, the engaging our guests, our golf and enterprise teams who really understand what our guests want, and they're providing goods and services that the customer wants at a great value. Our legal team, has found ways over the years to help fund forest management through carbon offset credits and the work that the real estate team does to make our dollars go even further in conservation.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Right. And then every idea that comes up in this organization is another idea to try to help supplement and fund what we do. Our legal team is supporting us at every juncture, first of all, to make sure that we can do it, and then finding a way to make it happen. And then our HR team with the volunteer services, they're just making our dollars go further every day. So it's really a team effort to help us continue to do what we do at a very high level of quality.
Is this for operating or both operating and capital?
Operating and capital.
Thank you.
It's our total funding.
Yeah, I think it's helpful so people know that the dollars that we collect are put to good use, and finding these ways to support the park, I think, is really exceptional.
I'm happy to answer any other questions. That's the end of what I have.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian?
Thank you, Gary. Also, you know, this is a 27-acre year for us. So while time was month by month, you'll actually see an additional pay period from 6 for the budget. So the numbers will change. It happens every 7 years. First action item is 2026 budget adjustment number 7. Gary?
Excuse me. Commissioner's budget adjustment number 7. Is for a total of $320,816. And nearly all of this increase in appropriations is associated with new grants and other funding donations and such that we've received and just appropriating
to spend those amounts that we've received or we have in hand. So I ask you to approve budget adjustment number 7 in the amount of $320,816.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
He forgot to thank IT, so they just kept his mic off the entire time.
Whoops.
Humor is good. The next action item is ratification of collective bargaining agreement with the Teamsters Local Union 507 Outdoor Experiences. It did take us a good bit of time, but we did come up with a 1-year contract, which will then allow for all the rest of the contracts to be negotiated at the same time. Recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 10.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment number 2, contract 1785, professional services. This is with SME. This is part of the special testing and inspections for the gorilla primate forest. It's just a little bit of an additional consumption for sequence 1. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 11 for a contract not to exceed $259,000. The adjustment was 42.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is change order number 3, contract 1543, construction manager at risk. This is with the AM Higley Company. This is the largest capital project that Cleveland Metro Parks has undertaken. They were all under our allowances and general conditions. Orangutan boardwalk revisions. There was a number of different things once everything kind of got set. The change order amount is for $155,178. It's still within its tolerance of budget. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 14.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is the guaranteed maximum price construction manager risk. This is zoo-wide capital construction projects for electrical infrastructure repairs, upgrades, and phase 2s. Anybody that's been paying attention to any of the conditions, we have lost power dozens of times, not only here at administration, but throughout the zoo. We are continually trying to increase our overall electric infrastructure through upgrades, repairs, watching our voltage. We have been working very hard at documenting all of these things with CPP, but we are bringing forward this contract for $403,676 to help really manage through all of our construction documentation for the electrical upgrades and repairs through the zoo. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 15 to 16.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next action item is the commodity uses reports. We have a number of bids for concrete, asphalt, flat roofs, sanitary sewer waste, Lightspeed point of sale for the golf. Jeff is here to talk diligently about Lightspeed and all of its possible capacities. He nodded yes. And Solon Deschau Chagrin Phase Two First Energy Line Relocation, an agreement that we struck with them. Recommended action for these usages falls on the top portion of page 17.
And Acacia gets paved.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Approval of vouchers and payroll.
Commissioner, resolution 26-08-102. In the amount of $23,701,880.20. All of these vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of the expenditures and compliance with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move acceptance.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments? Ready?
Morning.
Morning.
When I asked Brian last time about a survey done in Hinckley, he said he was unaware of it. He also said that selling alcohol at the spillway was undecided. On examining the survey, it was explicitly directed toward getting alcohol at the spillway. Final question led with how widely alcohol is now available at Metro Parks. Something to be proud of. Kind of a push-pull, it seems. There is local desire for water rescue equipment. Alcohol there would increase the risks. Surely the safety of visitors is more important than a drone show for the zoo. Also on safety. Last meeting, a visitor spoke about a race at Lewis Road Riding Field with the people running up and down the hill into the valley. That hill trail is the only park access for local riders. Her concerns were borne out when I later met a horse owner who had been there. A friend of hers was thrown when all the noise and chaos spooked an experienced horse. That woman talked to the event representative who was present, yet he did nothing to address the problems. She also described all the trash that they left. Now my perennial favorite, financial clarity. I too appreciate the new year-over-year comparisons, which could be even more useful if they went beyond operating to include cap expenses, creating an accurate picture of the true profit and loss. Are those profits real? Less helpful, many items in the invoices now lack details they used to have. The list of zoo performers is presumably for Asian Lantern Festival, but not specified. The $1,600 purchase of cigars was noticeable. Is that included with golf? Cost of tobacco licenses, storage, marketing, are those hidden in enterprise overhead or deducted from the revenue? Given this change, are employees still subject to nicotine testing? Is the health insurance underwriting okay with this? Or is your nicotine-free discount at risk? Is the smoking limited to the outside patios with legal separation, or can they be taken onto the course? Is BYOC okay? Even those bars and restaurants which still allow it severely restrict outside smoking to the benefit of non-smokers. Metro Parks, all about fresh air and healthy living, is going the opposite direction. Whatever meager profit you can get cannot justify the leading cause of cancer and premature death. Choose visitors' health and safety over profits. It's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Anybody else?
This is public comments.
Yeah.
I apologize ahead of time because I
type this up so that I could read it rather smoothly, but I did it on a computer upstairs. And when I got downstairs, the computers weren't talking to each other. So I emailed myself this and it's kind of busted. And if I start to shake, I'm not nervous. I suffer from Parkinson's. I'm Tony Matasicki of 247 Prospect Street in Berea. My home is directly across from Wallace Lake's new pavilion and volleyball courts directly. And I appreciate the time this morning. I am an encroacher. Yes, I am one of the 270 neighbors along the edge of the Millstream Run Reservation that has personal property encroaching on Metro Parks. I'm not denying that I am having personal property and still have a piece on the park land. I found out I was an encroacher when a letter was sent to me October 13th last year, along with an aerial photograph from spring of 2023 showing the instead of 20 feet away from the water's edge that I thought was park property, it's actually 30 feet. And 14 of my 17 steps that extend from a deck that's 15 feet in the air comes over the park property and sits on the base on public land. Never expected that. Expect or expectations. I believe that one word is the number one problem with communications breaking down on political issues, business deals, personal relationships, whether with friends, family, children, spouse, or lover. You hear it all the time. What did you expect? I didn't expect that. I didn't think they expected that to happen. You were expecting something different. If people would state or explain their expectations and would ask the opposite side what their expectations were, everything would probably run smoother, less turmoil, and more people in situations would be pleasant and happier. But people are afraid to say what they expect or ask, what do you expect? Well, coming into this meeting, I've been told expect nothing. Nothing is going to change or be done differently than what is already in process because you're dealing with the Metro Parks. So why am I wasting your and my time? That expectation is based on what others are telling me. Maybe when this is all said and done, I will be expressing them same sentiments. I hope not. Because what do I expect? That you will listen to my point. You will try to understand. You will take them into consideration and will at least review with an open mind that a different judgment could have been made. You don't know what to expect from me today. I am here to voice my opinion about my situation as an encroacher. I had a conversation with others and I understand why they might respond in the way they plan to or how they will move forward. I just hope that maybe some reaction to my cause may have positive reflection on their situation. The park system in letters has said I was not being punished and I wasn't in trouble, but instead was being educated on how to be a good neighbor, even sending me a good neighbor guide. I'm trying to understand the timeline of this whole process. Why all of a sudden, why the urgency? None of my neighbors had heard of the encroachment policy or a good neighbor guide. From my research, it appears to have been addressed in 2017 initially. Well, what brought it up? Were there numerous complaints by park users? All of a sudden, the spike of reports of harm, damage, and danger by rangers and park personnel? Or could it be a department or person's approach to show viability and reason for their existence? 5 years after the initial introduction of the issue, final discussion of the policy and guidelines were held and codified in December of 2022. My first indication of a problem, October 2025, almost 3 years from the enactment of the guide. I was told the park was divided into three groups and I was in the first group. Is Millstream Reservation the first group or the worst group? Were the letters sent just to the encroachers? If so, that means some neighbors may be in the process of encroaching right now and won't be told for 3 years. Seems to me it could have been done differently. In 2017, the public could have been informed, especially the bordering neighbors, that a problem exists and that a guideline and policy is in the works to remedy the problem. And that A, as of that date, no encroachments will be tolerated under any circumstance. B, existing encroachments will be evaluated and rated at a scale of circumstances of harm, danger, or disruption to the environment and public use, maybe rating them on a scale of 1 to 5 or first, second, third degree. with possible demand of immediate removal or minimal processes to allow or limit encroachments. Monthly board meetings could have been held in inviting the public to specifically speak about the encroachment issue. But look at the problem more than just a black or white issue, by the book, legal, unfriendly, my property, your property, get off, get out. There could be some room for satisfying some, but not everyone's expectations. Too late to change the way things happen, but not too late to re-examine or reevaluate the good neighbor guideline and encroachment policy enforced process. Based on my personal experience with the current process, the park system doesn't even want to respond to me. Besides the initial interactions with conservation stewardess specialist Lindsay Leichner, her supervisor Stephanie Kutzko, nobody is responding to my inquiries and invitation to come out, look at my encroachment. We encroachers are not all doing damage and not being good stewards of the park. I love the gem of the emerald necklace. I've sent emails to CEO Brian Zimmerman, Chiefs of Staff Kelly Manderfield, Sean McDermott, Joseph Rozak, and Natalie Rosane. I've been trying to find out who I need to talk to come to my property, examine the future outlook of the park, that runs alongside my house. What would I like to accomplish? I think the obvious, be able to keep the final 14 of my 17 steps to get access to the lake, which is only 20 feet away. Not as my personal private park, because through no fault of my own, nobody else can get to it. You can't see my encroachment by looking up at an aerial map. Realistically, something could be worked out showing how truly good neighbors can come to a new vision of stewardship, not only by the Cleveland Metro Parks, but the private property good neighbors as well. I thank you very much for your time, and I have copies of the letters that I received on the 25th of October and May of this year, and also the emails that I sent to Mr. Zimmerman and to the members, the chiefs of staff. I didn't give them to me ahead of time because I wanted you to pay attention to what I had to say. You could look and read these.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Rose, can I ask a question? How many properties, and this may be impossible to answer, how many properties interface with the Metro Park?
Yeah,
I mean, there must be thousands.
Thousands, yes. And when we adopted the policy, we did have two public meetings because it was a new policy, and we always do the two readings in public open session. And, you know, these are available for the public to come and comment. And I think that when we formally adopted the policy, this was an effort to formalize the practice that has been going on for years, and that is the good neighbor policy, where we do try to educate the adjacent properties. And because the Emerald Necklace is for everyone to enjoy and not private property owners to come to acquire our land, there have been hundreds of instances that we have gone in where folks have put their own fireplace, fire pit structures on our land. And so these last several years, we have had that more uniform and formal process to do this efficiently, consistently, and fairly. So, you know, we are even shoring up our proactive practices by informing new homeowners who buy property adjacent to the Metro Parks, welcome to the neighborhood, but please know, pay attention to your boundary line. It's important for you to adhere to those. We don't want additional encroachments. So I know we have dealt with Tony for a long time now, and we have been very responsive. As he has mentioned, this has been going on close to a year, and we have been to his property, I think, no fewer than 3 to 4 times. And yes, Lindsay and Stephanie have been communicating with him very thoroughly, respectfully, and clearly. And so the additional calls to other folks, his questions have been answered, and we have tried to clearly talk about the facts. We have surveyed the land, and as he is aware, those final steps are the part that are problematic and are encroaching on our land. And the issue is we just try to be as consistent as possible. If we make exceptions for one homeowner, how are we going to look at the other homeowners? So this is
particularly where, with the thousands of
yes
of
that's right, Commissioner.
Would make it almost impossible.
Right. So I think that, you know, we have been trying to work with him for close to a year. There's really no ambiguity in the facts, as he has stated. And we just don't understand that there's no plausible explanation as far as why we should allow his encroachment, but others have to remove theirs.
Is there no solution?
The solution is that those final steps are removed from our property.
No access down from that lower level to the ground below?
His property does not meet Wallace Lake directly. So
can he change the direction of the steps?
Well, I mean, he needs to stop his steps and then he can walk across our property to Wallace Lake from there, but the steps need to come out.
He's 15 feet in the air from the lower deck, correct?
And if he turns the stairway?
That's my question.
Sure.
There is a solution.
Am I allowed to respond to this?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I've talked to Lindsay twice. I've talked to Stephanie once. Nobody has been to my house from the Metro Park system.
We have been to your property.
These two surveyors came out in the spring and verified where the line was at. Nobody else has been to my property.
Can I interject?
Pardon?
Can I interject?
Yes.
I know you encroach, so you're aware that you're on the other property, correct?
Yes, and everybody's
looking. Is there no way that you can adjust your stairs so that they don't encroach?
That's why I said somebody needs to come to my property, because
I'm just asking a question.
No, you can't.
You can't structurally change the direction of your stairs.
My property, my backyard comes from the back of my house 12 feet, then goes at a 45 degree angle where they used to mine the quarries, down at an angle to the first flat spot. So looking at it to say, you walk from here and go on from my property to your property, where the stairs come down, there's seven normal staircases, maybe 13 steps. This is 17 or 18 steps down following the contour of the land to reach a flat spot to get to the lake. And from the bottom of my stairs to the edge of the water is 20 feet. When you go to this side of where, because I have three decks coming down, and the final deck, this deck and system was put in 35 years ago. I've owned the house for 23 years. The final small deck, where the stairs come down this way, there's the lake. This is at a 45 degree angle.
Did you put in those last set of
no,
steps?
No, the whole deck system was put in 35 years ago. I bought the house 23 years ago. And so the way the contour of the land is, and you can't, it's easy to say, well, just put the steps to the right or to the left. There's no way for me to do that without getting to where this park property is still the last 8 feet are still at a 45 degree angle. I'd be trying to chop. People have given me comments, dig steps into the side of the hill, walk down. I'm going to be 79, my wife's 74, my grandchildren and my friends and neighbors who also use the stairway to get to the lake, the kayak or whatever, they can possibly go down a steep hill barefoot. But for a person over the age of 40 to get off of that small deck down to the lake is impossible. And the funny thing about it is that I'm three houses away from a house that's also along the lake that owns down to the lake. You cannot get to the property, park property, without coming, unless you're coming on the lake in a canoe. You have to come through my property, come down the steps to get to the parks. Nobody can use that park land but me. And I'm not saying, okay, because of that, I get my own private little park. But anybody's can use it, but they can't. And if they prevent me from, and like I say, there should be some solution to say, Am I dumping oil on the ground seeping in and killing plants? I don't know who the other 6,000 neighbors are.
But the problem is we have to deal with the encroachment.
Right.
To be consistent.
And I understand what an encroachment is, and I'm not denying that I'm an encroacher. But there seems to me there should be some way to come up and say, your steps can be there, but let's negotiate to say no further this, no further that, nothing else. That's the only thing that's allowed. It's like if I have my kayak down there, I can have my kayak down there at the bottom of the steps on your property from 6 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, because that's when you're open. But then I would have to take my kayak and try to haul it up this hill at 45 degree angle and then bring it back down at 6 o'clock in the morning so I could leave it there all day so I can get to the park. I could figure out how to maybe take the kayak and store it up. There was a boathouse that was originally built alongside where my stairs are at. I've taken down the remaining wall. I've removed, we had some pictures and signs and birdhouses and things like that. People would pull up to where my house is at, take pictures of it. And it was like an attraction on the lake. It wasn't a distraction. I wasn't destroying anything. People just said, well, how nice it is. And they would take a picture of the deck system and all that. I thought I was an asset to the park system, that people would actually stop and take pictures of my house and my yard. And they thought it was part of Disneyland or something. I don't know what it is. But that seems to me that it can't be just black and white. You're speeding down the highway. The speed limit's 55. You're doing 60. The other guy's doing 80. We're both speeding. Do we both get tickets? I don't think so. There should be some reasonable choice to say, let's talk about this. But you cannot. I even took on the old building, on the old concession stand, there was a sun painted on the one side, and on the other side was a fish. And before you guys tore the building down, I took pictures of those because they just disregarded those murals that were there for years. And I painted those two things. I painted the fish on one part of my basement wall, which is the walkabout basement, and it's the sun on the other. Nobody from the park has seen that. If I was disrespectful to the park, I wouldn't be. If you look at the front of my house, which only has, I'm on a main road, Route 237, buses, sirens, motorcycles, trucks. You look at the front of the house, it's flowers and everything, noisy as all hell, but beautiful. My wife does a beautiful job of landscaping. We come to the back and it's like you're in a different world, 30 foot difference. My yard is only 80 foot deep, and you go from one world to the next. And it seems that there's nobody wants to listen, that don't take that other world away from me. I bought this house for my wife and I to retire, and we wouldn't have to do steps. It would be on one level. And eventually I'm not going to be able to do the steps at all, but my grandchildren and the rest of my family would be able to. But it just seems that there should be some way. I can't believe it. And I understand the law. I understand. Here's the line. You're on it. Get off. But that nobody, and I'm sorry, I didn't.
Rose Feeney.
Okay. That nobody's come to my house. Nobody's responded to me.
Yes, and Mr. Matuski, we hear what you're saying, but this is where in your opening statements, what you emphasized is, you know, how are people treated the same or differently? We treat everybody the same. I think the commissioners will remember a couple of months ago when we had the property owner who came, who had her horses grazing and fenced in on Cleveland Metro Parks property. And she was employing her principles of conservation that she was following. But we had to tell her the same thing, that even though she's embodying what she thought were principles of conservation, we couldn't have the Metro Parks property used privately for her horses in a fenced-in area on our property. So I'm sorry that when you bought the house that your bank or your due diligence did not reveal the encroachment. And we are trying to represent all the taxpayers in a very equitable, fair, and consistent manner.
Well.
Thank you. I think at this time.
When it comes to mortgage deeds and I've heard a lot of people say, well, it's your fault because you never got a survey.
We're not trying to say it's fault, but we do have to move on.
I understand, but most people who buy real estate, I'd be willing to bet that more than half have never hired a surveyor to do it. The mortgage deed, they look to see if the house is on the block. They don't look to see if you're a foot off the line on one side or another. Most people do not have their property surveyed when they bought it. So this is a deep survey.
Thank you.
Is the public comment?
Yes, if we have somebody.
Good morning.
Morning.
I don't want to formally know. I need to get a response. I'm back again. I have something for everybody if they want to. I know the Metro Park serves a variety of populations. Walkers, joggers, bikers, hikers, horseback riders, campers. Also, I'm sure Fisher people. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out. Hard job. It's important and it's appreciated by most people. So I'll just read what I have. It's just one page of reading. The rest is something else. As you already know and probably have heard from people locally, nationally, and internationally, the Cleveland Metro Park system is a rare treasure. Our area is lucky to have had someone with the vision and dedication to create such a wonderful, wonderful gift to the people of Northeastern Ohio. Preserving it and stewarding the land is a great responsibility. As a frequent park hiker, I have a concern about the surface on trails in a few of the parks. It seems your new policy is to use gravel on hiking as well as bridle trails. This is a horrible choice of surface for hikers and horses. Gravel is like walking on acorns. The pieces roll and slide and make it easy to slip and fall or twist an ankle. I can't imagine horses like walking on gravel either. It must get stuck in their hooves. In some places, it looks like the Metro Parks is building paved streets through the woods on what are supposed to be trails. With all the bark and wood chips available, and pine needles too, by the way, from the storms of the last years, why not use those two options to fill in spots? It would be greatly appreciated if you stuck to more natural materials on trails through the woods. The use of natural materials helps preserve the integrity and spirit of the parks. The APT is always an option for those who want a more man-made walking service. Enclosed are pictures from two places that do use wood chips. The first two are from the North Carolina Arboretum. And as you noticed in the second picture, that's a hill. Excuse me. So it works going uphill as well. The next three pictures are from the Shaker Nature Center. And they're taken on wet weather. It was raining that day. So I wanted to also show that the rain doesn't have to do anything to disperse or mess with the use of wood chips. So it would be interesting to know how those places, as well as others of similar climate, successfully maintain their wood chip trails. Please use wood chips in place of gravel on the hiking trails through the woods. You got wood chips. They're there. It's free. You can truck in the gravel. Why not truck in the wood chips? So afterwards, I was suggested to get a petition. And the last two pages are the start of a petition. Since your meeting was today, I stopped collecting signatures so I could come. These are, if you need, I have addresses for these people too, but it's not in part of the petition. I just have the signatures. So I'm just concerned about trails being trails and cement being cement. And it'd be nice because of the wide diversity of populations the park serves for all kinds of people who use the park to be able to use it.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question? The national park, for example, the towpath.
I'm sorry?
The towpath. Yeah, how do you feel about that? That surface?
Off of Rockside that goes down.
What, yeah, the one that goes along the canal.
That's wonderful for, it's okay. First of all, it's not through the woods, which I'm talking about with trails.
Right.
Through the woods. It's out and open. And it does serve a lot of different, I see more people biking and jogging on there than walking. It's okay, you adapt. The main thing is that the, especially the big gravel in some places in the park. In my other letter to you guys, I may name some specific locations where there was gravel. My first letter that I sent to you. I can survey and go around and tell you specific. Long answer to your short question, it's okay, but not ideal for hiking. But that I don't consider that a hiking trail because it's not through the woods and it's okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you. Also, it'd be nice to hear back to make this a beginning of communicating back and forth. I've emailed people, I've talked to maintenance people, I've talked to trail ambassadors, and I feel like I'm spitting in the wind because nobody, I don't have an answer for why the choice is the gravel, you know, and that kind of a thing. I'm babbling, so I'll stop.
No,
I think you got the point.
We get it. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
There are no other public comments. We will move into the information briefing policy items. Clear Road Bridge replacement update.
We all set?
Okay.
So ahead.
Tom.
Go ahead. Morning, commissioners. Would once again like to introduce to you Nicole English. She's program administrator with Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works. This item has been before you several times, most recently about a year ago, last August. So Nicole's going to provide an update on where the county is working to continue to advance the project and secure funding. So, Nicole.
Good morning. Actually, when I was updating this, I think the date last year I was here was 8/21, so almost the year that we gave you an update. So I'll quickly go through some old slides you've already seen. I believe most of you know where this is. The location of the Hilliard Road Bridge, which is just south of the I-90 bridge over the Metro Parks. The existing bridge conditions continue to deteriorate. These pictures actually were even years old. The diapers that are holding the falling concrete are aging and at the end of their useful life. We've worked really hard on trying to shore up. The trail has been moved underneath, trying to avoid any injuries, but this just continues to be an issue for the bridge, and it needed some, at first we thought rehab, but once we got into it, it really needed a replacement. So if you recall, we've been on this for quite some time. We started in 2022 with a feasibility study that was completed. We first proposed a single span steel arch. We know the public and also the Metro Parks had talked to us about really wanting to keep that arch structure, the look of it. And so that is what we worked on from 22 to 24. Unfortunately, the costs of construction had been rising and they went from 57 million to 87 million on the arch structure. So what we came back last year to talk to you about was that we had gathered all the stakeholders and really come to a conclusion that we just could not afford the arch bridge anymore, and we were moving forward with a steel girder type bridge. And so after that, we gave our consultant notice to proceed to work on the stage one plans. They had already been completed for the arch. We had to go back and do stage one plans for the new structure type. So this year we've been really focusing on stage two plans, which are coming in December, and some additional public engagement, and then also gathering funding. So while the cost estimate went down, we still did not have secured all the funding. So we have been working this year on getting our funding in order, and you'll see in a few slides, we feel that we're about there now. So the rest of this year will be spent with those stage two plans, finishing our right-of-way acquisition. Next year will be stage three and final plans, and then we'll sell the project in 2028 for a start of construction. Just a quick look at the existing versus the proposed bridge. You all probably are well aware of what it looks like on the top and then what it's going to look like on the bottom. The piers are getting pulled out of the river. That is a benefit to the river and the park. It will be clean. I'll show you some imagery. This is from the top. Nothing has changed here as far as what is on the top of the bridge. This is the same as when we were proposing the arch bridge. So you can see we are adding a shared use path, also a wider sidewalk. with the buffer, and we do have lookout areas that we know there's a lot of bird watching that goes on this bridge. And then the fence, one of the biggest things we get calls for literally every other month or so is really pushing us to put this fence on this bridge. We know we've had some tragedies that have happened, and people are really interested in making sure that we shore that up. Here's some imagery of what the bridge is going to look like. You'll see really streamlined, clean. That's the idea from below. The I-90 bridge is just to the north. It blocks it from many views. So we think kind of blending in with that wasn't a terrible look if we had to do something other than the arch. And we're about 18 feet higher than the I-90 bridge, just you can kind of see in that bottom left figure. Looking at our current cost estimate, we recently got an engineer's estimate because we are applying for a grant next month, I guess, in September. And so it's right under $60 million for construction. You can see we've secured $32.3 in federal funding. That's from ODOT and from NOAACA, local major bridge funding from ODOT and NOAACA STP funds right now. You can see what the local share right now is from the county. Putting in, we've paid for all of the planning and design and the right way up to this point. And we're sitting on $20 million unfunded, but I will explain what our plan is. Here's the two federal funding sources that we have. We are planning on, we've been working with NOAACA closely to increase their share. They are looking to use a SIB loan that would be paid back out of their STBG funds, and that will come in the draft TIP that will come out in October. So we're hopeful in the next month or two, we will find out that they will add another $20 million to their contribution and we can go forward with the project. We're also submitting an Ohio Public Works Commission loan, or not loan, grant next week, September 4th or so it's due. And that will be to offset some of our local share money. We had recent public involvement. If you got a letter or a notice, we put this out to all of the stakeholders, anyone who's within the project area, and anyone else who has shown interest in the project thus far. So they were invited to a public virtual open house. It was open for about a month. We got 56 responses. That's a word cloud of what we heard most. You can see arch is the biggest one. We definitely are still hearing that. We understand. We wish we could build that too. It's just with the climate and the funding right now, we just can't swallow that cost. There's 33 additional requests to be consulting parties. That's the group that, you know, will help define kind of our commitments and what we need to do to honor the old bridge and some enhancements. So we are currently reviewing those with ODOT, and we may add to the consulting parties list.
What's the volume of traffic daily count? Do you have that?
I don't have that, but it's significantly less than it used to be. So I want to say it's only in the 10 to 15,000 a day range. However, so we are going with less traffic lanes, which is how we get the shared use path. But there was some talk early on about, can you just eliminate the bridge? Do we even need it? And it is really an emergency route and a reliever for 90 if anything were to happen. So we kind of quickly got rid of that idea of not building it back, but it's not as much as it used to be. So it has gone down.
But there's still a huge safety consideration.
Correct. Right. So the current aesthetic enhancements that we're working on are those scenic overlooks, like I talked about, decorative lighting, the railing, the fencing, and then we're relocating the trail down below back to where it originally was. And then we have additional opportunities that we're going to be working with our stakeholder groups on is pier form liners and graphics, similar to what you could see there on Vrooman Road. Do we want the piers to have anything in them? Do we want to nod to the metro parks or the neighborhoods or anything around there? And then do we want some interpretive signage down along the base of those piers? So these are still opportunities we're going to work closely with your team on, and also the cities surrounding the bridge. So here's our key project milestones. Like I said, the funding, we're looking in September to submit this grant application, and then in October to see the draft NOAACA TIP come in with that final federal funding. And if those two come through, we will be kind of all systems go to get us to construction in early 28. So final design is finishing up stage two this year, and then stage three next year, final plans next year, and then our award process and sale with the construction in 28. This bridge type does allow us to shorten construction slightly. It's 2+ years, about 3 construction seasons, but it will be about 9 months earlier than the arch would have been. So we do get out of construction. The old bridge will come down. Yep, correct. That is all I have. So it will be completely closed during most of construction. Yeah. That is all I have. If you have more questions, happy to be here. I just wanted to provide this quick update, let you know where we stand as we go forward.
Thank you.
How does, can I have a question on the bridge? So when the current bridge is demolished versus when the bridge at your building will be built? So what's the timing of that?
So the very first thing they'll do is demo. So likely in summer of 28 is when the bridge would be dropped, and then it won't be reopened until the end of 30.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.
There is no old business. The next regular session will be on September 17th, Thursday in the boardroom, and there is no executive session.
Well, then ask for a motion.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all.